Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 1st of March 2012, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell and Irene Dowding. Your readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Ross Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. There are no special announcements this week, and I'm afraid we don't have the What's On feature. So the only thing special now, the only things to say before we get started are to give you the lighting up times. On Friday, the 2nd of March, the sun rises at 06:48 and sets at 17:49. So the sun rises at 10 to 7 in the morning and sets at 10 to 6 in the evening. Wednesday of next week, that's the 7th of March, sunrise is at 06:37, sunset at 17:58. So the sun will rise about 20 to 7 in the morning and will set just a smidgen before 6 o'clock in the evening. Just a reminder, if you have any problems with your memory sticks or your players, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. So that's 01962 862826. The main headlines this week are: High Street Market gets the thumbs up, Mum questions care policy after son's death, and budget slashed by £45 million. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
High Street Market gets the thumbs up. Market traders are queuing up to get a pitch on Winchester's High Street, according to the market's boss. It comes after a survey found that an overwhelming majority of people backed the market, which moved last summer. And business chiefs say the market is helping to swell numbers coming to the city. In the survey, carried out by Tourism South East, known as TSE, some 95% of the 200 people asked supported the relocation of the street market. Council and business leaders met at Winchester Guildhall to discuss the survey into the market, which sparked controversy when it moved from Middlebrook Street last summer. Many shops and shoppers complained it made the street too cramped. But the survey findings, presented by Parvis Khan of Eastleigh-based TSE Research Services, found that people, quote, clearly enjoyed the market. Asked if the market made visiting Winchester more enjoyable, 94% of residents and 95% of visitors agreed. Market manager Paul Lewis told the meeting that stores were now spread further along the High Street. As a result, there were more spaces between pitches and deliveries to nearby shops were no longer disrupted, he said. He added that traders were queuing to come to Winchester compared to there being lots of empty spaces 12 months ago. He said, "I run markets in Guildford, Southampton and Basingstoke, and Winchester is the one they all want to come to." Chris Turner, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, known as BID, said High Street footfall was rising too. He said, "What we didn't know is whether more people were coming to the High Street, but then didn't like what they were finding. But now we know that isn't the case." City Council leader, Councillor George Beckett, said the authority received several complaints after opening the High Street to market traders. He added that the council would investigate if a few pitches could go in the square once the repaving there is complete. But he admitted he had been pleased, but surprised by the overwhelming endorsement of the relocated market in the survey. Councillor Beckett, speaking in response to a question asked at a meeting of the full council by Councillor Robert Saunders, said in the long term, the market would move as part of the Silver Hill Renaissance. Councillor Saunders said the majority of correspondents from people in his St Michael's ward said they didn't want the market on the High Street. Councillor Beckett said it was a matter of balancing the needs of the market and retail traders. But at present, he didn't think they could do anything except congratulate the market traders on their success. Councillor Beckett said, "The markets are not to everyone's taste, but in general they are a significant part of the retail offering of the city and help attract visitors to the advantage of many city centre businesses." He said a final report on the market would be presented to Cabinet in April. Winchester MP Steve Bryan said, "It seems the public have spoken about the market and done so very clearly. An evidence-based approach is exactly what was called for from the council and is important in taking local people with them. I am glad they will keep this under review and feel sure residents with views either way on the issue will continue to make them known."
Mum questions care policy after son's death. Paranoid schizophrenic took own life. A Winchester mother has criticised aspects of her son's mental health care after he suffocated himself, an inquest heard. Diane Smith hit out at a tribunal that released her son Roland from being sectioned under the Mental Health Act in February 2010. The inquest heard Mr. Smith, 31, was later found dead by his mother and police last July at his home in Rance's Way, Badger Farm. Mr. Smith suffered from paranoid schizophrenia and had been at Melbury Lodge Psychiatric Unit under section 6 times before the independent tribunal, which also released him from having to take antipsychotic drugs. Mrs. Smith of Prior's Way, Oliver's Battery, said, "If anything comes out of Roland's death, it should be that people look properly at other cases like this. There should be greater understanding given. He had been in and out of hospital 6 times, so was it not time for society to say, 'Sorry, you're ill, and you have to take your medicine'?" But Mrs. Smith praised his day-to-day care by the Assertive Outreach Team, that's the AOT, at Melbury Lodge, and said they could not have done more to help Roland. After his release, Mr. Smith's condition deteriorated, and he was sectioned again in March 2011, returning to hospital briefly before doctors felt he was well enough to go home on leave. But the inquest heard he had never accepted he was ill, and had often complained about his once-a-fortnight medicine injections. Nicholas Pullen, a nurse who had worked with Mr. Smith since September 2010, said he strongly believed that there was nothing wrong with him, and as a result of that, he was reluctant to engage with services or continue treatment beyond when he was required to. Police attended his home on July the 29th to return him to hospital because he was recalled from leave after telling doctors he would no longer take medication, but found him dead. The inquest heard he was a former King's School and Exeter University student who studied engineering and was a talented mechanic. Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust said tribunals are an independent function and are a necessary legal option for anyone sectioned. Asked whether the tribunal made the right decision, a spokesman said he did not have enough information to reach a conclusion. He added, "It's obviously very sad for the family, but it's someone's right to call for a tribunal because they're being detained against their will, and it's quite acceptable for someone to challenge that if they feel they are healthy." A jury returned a verdict of suicide on Mr. Smith at the inquest on Tuesday.
Budget slashed by £45 million. Day centres, youth centres, libraries and other services are to be cut across Hampshire after ruling Tories voted through plans to slash £45 million from the budget. Campaigners and unions staged a protest outside the County Council Chamber in Winchester, complete with lone drummer and cries of no ifs, no buts, no public sector cuts. Opposition councillors called for the authority to spend some of its £213 million reserves to avoid cuts to services and the loss of a further 230 jobs. The county's share of the council tax bill will be frozen for the third year running at £1,037 for an average Band D property, but the cuts mean a controversial £21 million cut to the £302 million adult social care budget. 400 adults with learning disabilities will lose their council-run daycare, and an Andover care home for the elderly will close. Charges will increase for Meals on Wheels, home helps and transport day centres. Opening hours at 28 libraries will be reduced. Two libraries at Stanmore, in Winchester and North Baddeley are threatened with closure unless community groups can be found to run them. These cuts come after the closure of youth advice centres and the cutting of about 100 bus services and timetables. But Tory chiefs insist half of this year's savings will come from efficiencies, job cuts, reducing management, cost of contracts and staff conference expenses. Road repairs and child protection have been spared from the axe. Tory chiefs also announced plans to spend £3 million of reserves to help the vulnerable, including £900,000 for speech therapy for children with disabilities, £500,000 for a council apprenticeship scheme for children leaving care, £300,000 for college leavers with learning disabilities, and £300,000 to help troubled families turn their lives around. Setting out the £688 million budget, council leader Ken Thornber said, "We have protected the young, the vulnerable, the elderly, and we have maintained services that are among the best in the country. It has not been easy, neither will next year be easy, but we are within our goal." In an amendment to the budget, Liberal Democrat opposition leader Keith House called for the ruling Tories to take £19 million from the contingency funds to reserve cuts to children's centres, youth services, libraries, rural bus services, and to take a lead on green issues. The amendments, which were voted down by the Conservative majority group, included spending an extra £10 million on adult social care. The council is planning to spend £80 million of its £214 million savings next year. Up to £47 million has been earmarked to settle equal pay claims. Other budget plans include spending £7 million on new shared council offices, £4 million on improvements to school buildings, children's homes and study centres, £3.7 million to boost broadband in rural areas, and £4 million on extra care housing for the elderly. The authority is faced with a shortfall in government funding of £77 million between 2011 and 2015, and this is accompanied by a photograph of the protest group outside Hampshire County Council budget meeting, including members of Unison and that lone drummer.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death notices. Barrow, Marion Barrow, on the 21st of February, aged 91. Dawkins, Alan Dawkins, on the 19th of February, aged 40. Dean, Arthur Bruce Dean, at home on the 25th of February. Gardner, Philip Hatton Bruce Gardner, on the 23rd of February, aged 91. Hardy, Elsie May Verity Hardy, in hospital on the 24th of February, aged 91. Holt, Lynn Holt, on the 18th of February. And Jones, Gladys Jones, on the 21st of February, aged 102. And now we have Christian comment.
This week it is written by Paul Kennedy, and he entitles it Between Animals and Angels. Near the start of Lent, we read that Jesus went into the wilderness and He was with the wild beasts, and the angels waited on him. This is echoed in Augustine's observation that humankind is between beasts and angels. We are inferior to angels and superior to beasts. Augustine points out humanity's tension between being motivated, like beasts, by our instincts, and gut reactions, while simultaneously, like angels, being capable of acts of altruism and beauty. Perhaps we have historically ignored our proximity to the beasts. The book of Genesis' creation myth recalls how human beings were made in the image of God, with dominion over all other creatures. It is an image which exaggerates our distance from the beasts we use for food and clothing. However, our history shows we are the most murderous animal on the planet, and have killed, on the basis of religion, nationalism, and even football. We must acknowledge our animal instincts while striving for the compassion of angels. The funeral service recalls that in the midst of life, we are in death. And this is not just about the frailty of human mortality, but our propensity to perpetuate violence. While the gravitational pull of the human herd is usually benign, as for the latest iPad or phone, it is the same instinct that has led to lynchings from Baghdad to Belfast. When the human herd also claims dominion over creatures, this contributes to animal cruelty and environmental pollution. The human condition is constantly pulled between higher and lower impulses, between the compassionate and the egotistical. The moral philosopher Immanuel Kant offers insight here by stating, "All rational beings stand under the law, that each of them should treat himself and all others never merely as means, but in every case also as an end in himself. Other people are never here to serve us. This insight should also be extended to the beasts and creation. Too often Christianity has emphasized an anthropomorphic view, with humankind as the crown of all creation. This certainty over our place in creation is often mirrored in certainty regarding religious or political beliefs. However, a poem by Yehuda Amichai warns against such certainty. From the place where we are right, flowers will never grow in the spring. The place where we are right is hard and trampled like a yard. But doubts and loves dig up the world like a mole, a plough. And a whisper will be heard in the place where the ruined house once stood."
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. It's quite a sparse crop of letters this week, only five. Anyway, we'll start off with them now.
And the first one is from Keith Wood, who says that Barton Farm battle was lost 8 years ago. "Sir, Judith Martin's letter last week was the latest in a campaign to demonise Councillor Beckett, suggesting he alone was responsible for Barton Farm. This ignores history. The Chronicle published a timeline of events which stated that the prospect of development first arose in 1995. It reported that the Liberal Democrats in 2001 earmarked Barton Farm as a reserve housing site. This was accepted in the local plan adopted in 2006. Actually, Councillor Beckett moved an amendment against using Barton Farm for this purpose, but was voted down by the then council's controlling group. The Lib Dems put forward Barton Farm as a major development area, and this was accepted by the inspector as a reserve site. Having been accepted by both the government and the council, it was effectively a done deal. It was formally passed by the Conservatives in 2006 with Liberal support. In 2007, pressure was put on the council by the government to find land to build 12,200 homes over the next 20 years. failure to identify sufficient land meant that the reserve site came into play. In 2009, as part of the LDF process, the council was required to produce a master plan which conceded development on Barton Farm if sufficient other sites could not be found. The master plan was passed by 48 votes to only 8 against. The pre-submission of the LDF core strategy came before the council last December, which effectively stated that we could not find another site big enough to meet the housing numbers the government required. Currently, the council has 27 Liberals, 27 Conservatives, 2 Independents and 1 Labour member. In December, after 7 hours of debate, it was agreed that Barton Farm was the least damaging way to meet the targets. Perhaps Judith Martin will accept that all parties, in effect, reluctantly went along with the Barton Farm proposal. I was one of the only 3 city councillors who spoke against at the Carla Holmes appeal. I believe that Ms. Martin also spoke. I'm afraid we were all fighting a lost battle, as it was effectively decided back in 2004. Councillor Beckett was the last of a series of leaders left holding the parcel. A bit of balance in the letters would not go amiss. That's from Keith Wood, Locks Lane House, Sparsholt.
And this next letter is from a regular contributor, Phil Yates, and it's headed Nothing New. So, what a contrast in the photos of Winchester High Street of 1910 and circa 1980, Chronicle, February the 16th and 23rd. The first with two-way traffic and the second pedestrianised. There is plenty of hustle and bustle today without adding to the pollution in St George's Street. Anyway, most of the High Street has now been tastefully resurfaced for pedestrians only, and long may it last. Peter Stewart may not recall the High Street of the 1930s as I do, but I can assure him that even in those days there was serious congestion of traffic, especially in the area where the photographs were taken. The only time it became quiet was on a Thursday afternoon, half-day closing for all shops, and of course on Sundays and bank holidays, when trading ceased altogether. The High Street had more variety of shops than today, with several family-run businesses such as Edmonds, Townend, Warrens and Clifton's, the proprietor of each firm becoming mayors of the city. There were 13 butchers and 8 pubs. None now exist. Instead, we have mobile phone outlets, estate agents and building societies. We are privileged, however, to have possibly the oldest street in the country laid down by the Romans in circa 70 AD. And that was Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester.
Michael Keane writes of the debt we owe to Molly Cooper. Sir, I wonder how many other readers noticed the death at 96 of Molly Cooper, because a generation of Stanmore schoolchildren had good cause to be grateful to her. Mrs. Cooper, teachers didn't have first names in those days, taught the top stream third-year juniors in the 1950s and 60s and got them ready for the dreaded 11-plus exam. Her forte was to get us to learn our tables and imperial measurements with quick-fire tests every Friday morning, which we looked forward to because there was a chance of a suite if you got enough right. I'm sure knowing my tables saved me hours over the course of a working life in accountancy, and I'll bet there are still dozens of Wintonians who, over 50 years later, can still tell you instantly how many ounces in a pound or how many yards there are in a mile. Friday mornings also brought the spelling test, and anybody who, say, left the first R out of February would instantly be told, if you say it right, you are much more likely to spell it right. If all this gives anybody the idea her lessons were dull, nothing could be further from the truth. Her Bible stories were delivered with great enthusiasm, and she was passionate about cricket and quite happy to take us boys for both football and handwork the girls, of course, doing needlework. Again, over 50 years on, I'm sure a lot of us, when doing DIY, can still hear her saying, "Measure twice, cut once." Our last term at Stanmore was spent with Mrs. Cooper teaching us all about Winchester, from the Iron Age, through the Romans, Anglo-Saxons, etc., through to modern times. I particularly recall her telling us to look up above head height at all the buildings in town to recognise the different ages and styles. Now in my 60s, I often look back on those days at Stanmore with great affection, and if asked to name the one person who had the most effect on my life, I'd unhesitatingly say, Mrs. Molly Cooper. So says Michael Keane from Hairstock, Winchester.
John Doyle talks about alternative sites for leisure centre. Sir, I was interested in the article about a possible relocation of the leisure centre from its present site at River Park. Given that this is an important facility for the people of Winchester, and given the need to reduce traffic within the city, its location is paramount. I took a look at a map and tried to identify the most accessible location in the city, that is, the one least furthest from as many neighbourhoods as possible. We are only a small city, and if you locate wisely, most residents can be within walking or cycling distance. No doubt the planners have a better tool for this sort of task, but in the absence of this, readers might like to do the same as I did and determine a centre of the residential area. I came up with a point close to Oram's Arbour. This does not mean a site is available here, but the idea is that the new site should be as close as possible to this central location. Actually, River Park is not so far away, so is a good starting point, given that the leisure centre is already there. Surely this is the default site. Why consider elsewhere? Where I would not choose is Bar End. The location of the university sports stadium there should mean that to balance this eastward bias, any new indoor centre should be on the west side of the city. I agree with Chris Pines that the Serco depot site at Bar End is ideal for affordable housing, and I urge the council to consider this and look to the existing site, or west of the city centre, for the leisure centre. That letter's from John Doyle, Chilcombe Lane, Winchester.
This next letter is accompanied by a photograph of the very handsome and imposing bronze eagle, which was outside the Museum of the Army Flying, Middle Wallop. It's headed, "How effective will new regulations on selling metal be?" Sir, the unspeakably vile crime you reported last week, the theft from Middle Wallop Army Air Corps Museum of the bronze eagle given by Mrs. Beverly Ferry in memory of her late husband, the well-respected John Ferry, makes one wonder how effective will be the new regulations coming into force outlawing cash payments for metal. Any scrap merchant offered anything like a bronze sculpture, even if broken to pieces, or, for that matter, sheets of lead, would know it to be stolen, and that it is criminal to buy it. The thief would only sell it to someone he knew would buy it in that way, who, in turn, would only buy it from someone he knew was a thief, as otherwise he could be caught in a police sting operation. Cash, not a cheque, would pass, unrecorded in any account books. Only a physical audit could reveal surplus metal, which could well be off-site and or surreptitiously disposed of abroad. And what police resources are available for that? And the audit of cash transactions amongst the criminal fraternity? So where is the deterrent? And that's from John Duckworth, 5 Bells Lane, Nether Wallop, Stockbridge.
Next, historical items. The one from 200 years ago isn't actually about Winchester, but we thought it was worth putting in anyway. So we'll start off with 200 years, then 100 years, 50 years, and finally 25 years.
So, in 1812, on Thursday, Michael Kelly and Darby Hall were committed to the city jail in Oxford for uttering and having in their possession great quantities of counterfeit shillings. The pair, in company with a deaf and dumb woman, who pretends to cure all disorders, were travelling the country, the men giving themselves out as rat catchers and umbrella menders. The doctress was discharged for want of evidence.
100 years ago, that was 1912. The most successful event yet organised by the management of Winchester Skating Rink was the Masquerade Carnival on Thursday evening. The date being the 29th of February, it was by no means an inappropriate day for a social gathering of such a description, and the popular interest awakened was proved by the fact that it was in a record in the annals of skating carnivals in Winchester.
And in 1962, 50 years ago, there was no division when Hampshire County Council fixed rates on Monday at 14 and sixpence in the pound, an increase of sixpence. The total budget is £23,880,465. And the increase has been kept to a modest figure by taking the equivalent of a 1 5 pence rate from accrued balances. Chairman, Mr. Alan Lubbock, said the estimates had been prepared with the greatest restraint against a background of a rapidly increasing population and ever-developing services to the public.
25 years ago, in 1987, major changes could be on the way for improving the centre of Winchester by ridding traffic from one of the busiest city streets. The radical approach has been sparked off by the continuing controversy over lorry deliveries to shops in the High Street that often bring traffic in St George's Street to a standstill. The Traffic Management and Car Parking Subcommittee feels the time is right for a study to pave the way for the pedestrianisation of St George's Street.
Nothing changes, does it?
Isn't that lovely, though? I mean, there's this. The time is right to study to pave the way for the pedestrianisation. Yes. But I can't understand this. Why does the traffic in the High Street deliveries of by lorries in the High Street bring traffic in St George's Street to a standstill?
Because they offload in St George's Street, because all the shops in the High Street back onto St George's Street.
Yes.
Right, we will continue on now with the Chronicle comment, and then it will be first person.
Yes, the Hampshire Chronicle this week is entitled Street Market is a Commercial Success. When the results of polls edge into the 90%, suspicions arise that the figures may have gone through the office of the North Korean Ministry of Information. But a survey of 200 people conducted by Tourism Southeast revealed that 9 out of 10 people supported the relocation of the street market from Middlebrook Street to the High Street. Setting aside the relatively small size of the sample, the figures are clear. 95% of visitors and 94% of residents agreed it made visiting Winchester more enjoyable. Recent meetings have heard the market move has been a commercial success, bringing an additional buzz to the streets, and traders are queuing up to join the fun. There were certainly teething problems last year, with access restricted to many shops. For many, the High Street, which took through traffic until 1974, should always be a thoroughfare. In the long run, the original idea from Thornfield was that the market would move to the more spacious Broadway. But it'll be interesting to see, if and when Silver Hill is completed, whether the traders and shoppers will be happy for yet another move.
And this is First Person. It's written by George Hayter this week, and it's headed, quite honestly, I've no idea. According to Theodore Zeldin on Radio 4, it's best to tell the truth. Professor Zeldin was telling Olivia O'Leary that under his new conversation manifesto, he wants everyone to talk more about who they really are. The eminent Oxford philosopher thinks that to improve society, we should say what we actually think. Despite my misgivings about this doctrine, I've agreed to an experiment in this edition of the First Person column. In the past, my writing has been dogged by misguided tact. Now here comes total honesty. I can think of nothing worth saying. This phenomenon is not unknown among literary giants. It's just a matter of me looking at the ideas list with top Hampshire writers such as Jane Austen and myself have always kept for times when we go blank. Nothing left on my list. I'll have to stick with random thought. Whatever I write is always ruined anyway by sub-editors who litter their 19th century punctuation all over it. Some people have no idea how to run a newspaper. Saying what I think certainly is fun. Nearly halfway, just 280 words to go. I could use them up describing the time I walked around Winchester with my flies open. That is a frank revelation, but it's probably not amusing. We all stand and chat to people with our flies undone at one time or another. Need to get away from flies. Decent idea, quick. I wonder if other contributors to First Person go blank. They probably got hundreds of interesting ideas. It seemed an entertaining notion, a candid common column, but frankly I'm finding it hard to make it work. I blame Hampshire. Not enough going on at this time of year. No wonder I've got no ideas. What about Saliva Hill, or whatever it's called? They're going to obliterate half of Winchester under redevelopment there. I should have a view on that. Perhaps I would have a view if I'd seen the plans. I did ask the council, but I was told I had to see someone and have the plans explained. Well, that put me right off. I should have persevered, but I bet our other columnists don't do any research at the council or anywhere else. Do readers even care about Saliva Hill? Half of them are commuting bankers from London who only sleep there. It is not often a journalist can be completely honest. I hope everyone appreciates my refreshing approach. Just in case, I'd better say goodbye. I'm afraid there's a fair chance now that I won't be contributing to this column again unless I think of something quick. Hello, editor. About the column, I've had a change of mind. What do you mean it's already gone to the printers? Honestly.
A new feature in the Hampshire Chronicle is that every now and again they're going to do a feature on a particular area of Winchester or one of the villages or towns around Winchester. This week they have been focusing on Week. So the next three items that we're going to read deal with Week.
The spotlight on Week. The community spirit is not lacking in Week, which is home to a popular community centre and also boasts several active groups. Gemma North, aged 26, has been managing the community centre in Taplings Road for the past 4 years with her mother, Helen, aged 49. The centre has been in Week since 1954 and includes a bar and members' club, running regular evening events alongside classes such as line dancing, keep fit and upholstery. It also stages a major annual fundraiser for a different charity each year. Recent examples include a performance of the Full Monty in 2010. Miss North, who leads a team of 9 volunteers, said, "We do need to do more for the community, like teams. But as with everybody and anybody, it's having the staff to be able to run events. It's having more volunteers to commit to doing it." A focus on teenagers is what sparked another community group into life, the North Winchester Your Community Action, abbreviated to NWYCA, set up by Ali Ramsden. She is aiming to build a new community centre in Week, which would hold regular events for young people, as well as the rest of the community, including a focus on several Gurkha families. Mrs. Ramsden said, "My drive is to bring in a community centre that is current. We have secured the funding now, and that's a really good step forward, and we know where we want to be. We will strive to make a successful centre as soon as we have a secure site." Hannah Jane Churchman, aged 17, a Peter Simmons College student of Stockbridge Road, said, "There's not much for teens to do here. The area is generally more older people and young children, so the focus is on them." A YMCA was based at Dean Park until around 20 years ago, when it was developed into housing. But Councillor Alan Mitchell, who has represented WEEK on the City Council for 30 years, said youth outreach programme Street Reach was doing good work in the area with artistic and sporty events. He said there were signs some young people were beginning to cause disruptions because they had nothing else to do. But this is a good way of focusing young adults. A problem for many in WEEK is parking, with commuters and students at Peter Simmons College often blamed for clogging up the roads. Ruth Harrison, chairman of WEEK Tenants and Residents Association, said, "Parking is the biggest problem in WEEK. We get commuters parking up here in Stony Lane, but we get the police involved, and they are very good at helping us out." The association, set up in 2004, meets regularly at St Barnabas Church to discuss local issues. Traffic orders have recently been passed in WEEK to help tackle the problems. The City Council passed measures where disabled parking bays in Fromond Road become blue badge permit holders only, while two-hour limited waiting periods have been introduced on restricted parking bays in Stony Lane.
A good boozer is what's needed. What WEEK needs is a good place to have a pint, according to City Council representative Eileen Berry. Councillor Berry, who has lived in WEEK and nearby Hairstock for the past 45 years, said a watering hole was badly missed. She said, "Right up to the 1960s, we had this strong community feel and every pub you went to was full. People miss their pubs. They are somewhere you can tick over and have a rest. WEEK was once served by Chimneys, also known as the WEEK Hotel, in Burnett Close, which was built to complement the housing estates in the 1950s, but closed in 2004. The site is earmarked for a new Aldi store. Residents don't have too far to go, though, with the Roebuck in Stockbridge Road and the March Hare in Hairstock providing good alternatives."
Churches thrive thanks to congregations. WEEK is an area well served by the church, with two in close proximity in Fromond Road. The Reverend Philip Cochrane became parish priest at St Barnabas Church for WEEK, Hairstock and Tegdown in January, and said he was enjoying his new role and looking forward to exciting events later this year. He said the congregation here is great. We are a growing church and more people seem to join every week. We're now trying to get ready for the upcoming Jubilee celebrations and having parties and generally serving the community in new and exciting ways. Just down the road, Wesley Methodist Church remains a pillar of the community, particularly for children. It regularly holds youth sessions for pre-teens and teenagers every month, along with special half-term and holiday events. John and Margaret Haynes of Loveton Lane, Kingsworthy, have been doing the church gardening ever since joining the congregation 23 years ago. Mrs. Haynes, 73, said the church does very good work but is struggling with the number of children attending services. But they do a lot of weekday events for children and they are very successful. A Roman Catholic church was based in Stony Lane but services stopped in 2004. The site has since been on the market for development and was targeted by NWYCA as a place for a new community centre.
That concludes the little feature on WEEK, and we now move on to items of general news interest.
And it so happens that my general interest one does concern WEEK. Elder statesman of the Zipper Club, A Week resident is celebrating a pair of birthdays this month. Harold Curley Kingsley of Frohman Road is one of Britain's longest-serving heart transplant patients, celebrating the 29th anniversary of his operation today, Thursday, before turning 68 on March the 18th. He has long since passed the average life expectancy for transplants after he was told the average time a patient lived post-operation was 5 years. Mr. Kingsley is now approaching the Zipper Club's 31-year-old record set by the American Tony Huseman, who died in 2009. But he's not bothered about breaking it. He said, "If I become the longest living person with a heart transplant, people will start waiting for me to pop my clogs. If I become the record holder, then I become it. And if I don't, I don't." Curley, named for his locks of hair in his younger days, said he gained a new lease of life after the operation in 1983. An avid sportsman before the transplant, Curley continued running after the operation and competed in several races and marathons to raise money for the British Heart Foundation and Papworth Hospital, where he underwent his life-saving procedure. Mr. Kingsley, who served with the Royal Green Jackets for 18 years, spends more time watching sport on television now after contracting arthritis and Parkinson's disease, but is still happy with his heart's performance. He said, "The heart is still going strong. It's just everything else that is letting me down now." A resident of Frohman Road since 1978, Mr. Kingsley is happy in Week, although he thinks there could be one or two improvements made. He said, "There's not much for young kids to do around here, and there wasn't even when my two sons were young either. There are a couple of parks, but there used to be a YMCA, which was taken down years ago. Week needs something to keep younger people occupied and something for the sporty." And this article is accompanied by a picture of a very cheerful, happy-looking Mr. Kingsley. Admittedly, he's lost his curly locks, but he's now grown a beard and a moustache, and I suppose that makes up the difference.
Fire moved Kitty and friends to help. A Winchester schoolgirl was so moved by a hospital fire that she decided to raise money for a new scanner. Kitty Martin, 11, and her friends raised £131.27 by organising a cake sale at Weston Primary School. She presented the cheque to Mary Edwards, the chief executive of the trust that runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The blaze wrecked the MRI scanner unit last December, and only the bravery of the fire service stopped it spreading to the main buildings. Kitty said, "I live close to the hospital, and my school is also very near. We saw the smoke from the fire on our way back from a school trip. My friends, Emily Hunt and Daisy Cole, and I went to investigate after school and couldn't believe our eyes when we saw the flames. We watched all the fire engines arriving and the firemen rushing around. It was scary to watch. We could feel the heat from where we were standing. We were worried the fire would spread. My mum, brother and grandma all work at the hospital, and I was born there, so we have close links with the hospital." Mary Edwards said, "Kitty was amazing, and for someone so young to take it upon herself to raise that money and persuade her friends to get involved as well is astounding."
Women in Government theme at meeting. Winchester Rotary members heard about the role of women in governance of Uganda. The High Commissioner for Uganda, Joan Rwabayomere, I hope I pronounced that properly, was the guest of honour at its latest meeting last week, where she was accompanied by her son Mark, who is a student at Winchester University. Among those present were the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Barry Lipscomb, the Dean of Winchester Cathedral, the Very Reverend James Atwell, and the Vice-Chancellor of Winchester University, Professor Joy Carter. More than 130 people attended the dinner at the Holiday Inn, Morn Hill. Among several other Africa-themed presentations, Winchester Rotarian John Wilkinson, Secretary and Trustee of Education Uganda, spoke about the work of the Hampshire-based charity, which works to improve primary education in Uganda and which Winchester Rotary is supported. And a very friendly looking photograph accompanies this, listing Professor Joy Carter and the Professor of President of Winchester Rotary, David Farthing, and Her Excellency Joan Rabwayo-Mary, High Commissioner of Uganda. I hope it was a successful meeting.
Councillor is bowled over at Owslebury. Hampshire's leading schools politician has praised Owslebury Primary, near Winchester, for its wonderful environment and happy children. Councillor Roy Perry visited the 90-pupil school to meet the pupils and see the refurbished classrooms, new IT equipment, and witness the benefits of a small village school. Head teacher Mrs. Elena Ponson gave a guided tour of the school and its large playground and field. Councillor Perry then popped into assembly before being quizzed by pupils on the school council. He said, "It's a very impressive school, with very happy children with very inquiring minds, who are ready to ask searching questions and speak up for themselves. The environment is really wonderful, a nice, clean, bright building in an incomparable setting." Councillor Perry asked questions about the stories being created by children and the infants and was impressed to hear that French is taught from the reception area upwards. There are two after-school French clubs which are run by a parent, and Councillor Perry also witnessed another parent preparing to run the weekly cooking club. Pupils wanted to know if Councillor Perry had visited the House of Commons, whether he wanted to become leader of the council, and if he would like to be a judge at the final of the school's annual speech competition. Mrs. Ponson said, "We were really pleased to welcome Councillor Perry to Owslebury and show him our wonderful school. He was genuinely interested in everything we do here and was very positive about the school and our children." And this article is accompanied by a colour photograph, probably of the whole school, they're in their bright blue sweaters and white shirts, and everyone smiling and looking very happy indeed.
U-turn and apology as speakers tell of home care hardship. County council chiefs have signalled a U-turn over unfair increases in home care for severely disabled people. Families and disabled pensioners said the fees, some of them increased by 75%, had penalised the most vulnerable. And County Council leader Ken Thornber apologised for the hardship caused and admitted the council, quote, "may have overlooked the impact of our policy on some clients," unquote. Councillor Thornber said £1 million would be ring-fenced to address what he called the, quote, "unforeseen consequences of our charging policy," unquote. Director of Adult Services Jill Duncan has been asked to report to Cabinet on how it can address the unfairness. Last October, as part of cost cutting, the council increased costs for the service that provides help with washing and dressing to £15.30 per hour, up on its 2010 fee of £14.80. It also stopped automatically paying for a second carer for those in need of two carers per visit. Those with savings and income of more than £23,250 had to pay the full cost of their own double-up care. The Hampshire Chronicle highlighted how some disabled people have been hit by bills demanding an extra £200 per week. The rethink was announced after a relative and a disabled pensioner spoke at a meeting of the full County Council last Thursday. Chris Chalk told councillors her 85-year-old mother had both legs amputated and is confined to a wheelchair. She lives in her own flat in sheltered housing and relies on two carers who visit four times daily. Her weekly home care bill rocketed from £262 to £462 last year. Mrs. Chalk from Chandler's Ford said many disabled pensioners in need of double-up care were unable to fight for themselves and were an easy target for cuts. She said, "Whilst there may be a need for the council to cut costs, why are you targeting the old and vulnerable? something the government said they would not do. She also hit out at a postcode lottery that means disabled people in the Southampton area are not charged for a second carer. Disabled pensioner David Kerridge, 80, told the meeting of the bombshell of finding out his weekly home care bill was rising from £133 to £210. Dr. Kerridge is partially sighted and confined to a wheelchair after his left leg was amputated, but he travelled from his Rumsey home to tell councillors of the demoralising impact of the massive increase. The retired university lecturer said, "The idea that as you get more disabled and you need more care, you have to pay more, is to my mind a tax on disability."
Author wows pupils with Roman tales. The events of ancient Rome were brought to life in a Winchester classroom. Author Simon Scarrow presented the latest book, Gladiator Street Fighter, from his best-selling Gladiator series to pupils at the Pilgrim School in Winchester. Around 100 boys in Year 6, 7 and 8 attended the talk, in which Mr. Scarrow displayed his knowledge of the gladiatorial games in ancient Rome, which is the setting of his books. He talked about the true reality behind gladiators and answered the children's questions. Pupils also recreated a mock gladiator event using flashcards and a grid projected onto a screen. The series tells the story of Marcus, a young boy who was sold into slavery and forced to become a gladiator, while the second book tells how his training continues in the city of Rome, where the streets are plagued by gangs. The visit was part of a national tour set up by Penguin's Children's Publishers and was organised in collaboration with the P&G Wells Bookshop in Winchester. Later in the day, Mr. Scarrow also visited the Toynbee School in Chandler's Ford, and he is pictured here with three of the Pilgrim schoolboys and two versions of his book.
Winchester 10K. Karen Aslett won the women's race in last Sunday's Winchester 10K. The Winchester Athletic Club's veteran crossed the line in 38 minutes 20 seconds, comfortably beating Angela Carpenter of Chichester Runners, who finished in 39 minutes 12 seconds. The men's race was won by Poole Athletic Club's Richard Horton in 32 minutes 54 seconds. In total, there were 671 finishers from more than 700 runners. And as only just over 100 of the finishers were representing running clubs, an encouraging number of the entrants were made up of regular fun runners. The course started and finished at River Park Leisure Centre and headed out towards Kingsworthy before climbing up Nations Hill and heading back into the city via Andover Road. The Hampshire Chronicle's sponsored event is one of the oldest races on the local running scheme.
City Mill welcoming more visitors. Record numbers of visitors are flowing through the doors at Winchester City Mill. In the past 12 months, the National Trust property has welcomed more than 40,000 people, compared with 36,000 the year before, 23,500 5 years ago, and 16,000 back in 2001. The mill is putting the increases down to offering more activities and events. It has included milling and baking workshops, along with art and history exhibitions. The venue has also featured on Countryfile, Spring Watch, and The One Show, chiefly due to its otter project. The mammals are often caught on camera at the mill, which stands above the River Itchen. The mill in Bridge Street was rebuilt in 1744, but most of its materials date from the 15th century. It reopened in 2000, and by 2004 it had started producing flour again after a 90-year break, and now turns out 10 tons of it per year.
Summer gigs could attract 15,000 revellers. Matterley Estate to host June and August events. Up to 15,000 music fans are expected to descend on Winchester this summer for two concerts at the Matterley Estate. It is the first time the venue will have hosted two musical festivals almost back-to-back. One will be a new event in June entitled Golden Down, where 5,000 revellers are due. Around 10,000 more will be flocking to the return of Boomtown Fair in August. The site, between the A31 and the A272, has hosted music and motocross events for more than a decade. However, it has never held two music festivals with revellers camping overnight in the same year. Concerns were raised by Itchen Valley Parish Council when the venue was first brought into use. Penny Flemons, who chairs the council, said the organisation of events was now much improved. She said some residents were still affected by noise, depending on the wind's direction during festivals. Yet the problems, which also include traffic, parking, had reduced in recent years, she said. The organisers of these festivals have become much better at talking to us and asking us what our concerns are. We found that constructive, and I think the most important thing is to keep talking, she said. However, she added that if more events were being held, residents might feel that it was going too far. She also added, I'd like to think that they know what's reasonable, such as just having a couple of events or maybe some motocross, but anything more would be unreasonable and we would have saturation. Peter Kilminster, who chairs Tichborne Parish Council, said its main concern was noise, especially after midnight. He said, we don't want to be killjoys, but there needs to be a better balance between people having a good time and people being able to sleep. Winchester City Council has dealt with several applications to license events at the site in the past decade. It led to a deal with civic chiefs where the landowner, Peveril Bruce, can host six events annually of up to 30,000 people. He has never used the full quota, and the local authority must be told 120 days in advance of such events. A council spokeswoman said notice had been given for Golden Down and Boomtown Fair. The authority had not been notified about any other events at this time, she added. Golden Down will take place from Friday, June the 15th to Sunday, June the 17th. Organisers initially planned to hold it on the outskirts of Dartmouth in Devon, but the farm they wanted to use had no licence, unlike the Matterley Estate. The festival would take place on a different part of the estate to previous events. Instead of using Matterley Bowl, Golden Down will be in the Black Bush Valley, 1 mile further east. The Bowl will host Boomtown Fair from Thursday, August the 9th, to Sunday, August the 12th. A statement from the organiser said, the town walls have expanded dramatically for 2012, giving us almost double the space of 2011. Yet the population is only enlarging a fraction to accommodate the new streets and stages. Acts confirmed include Dub Pistols, Sonic Boom 6, Shy FX, Asian Dub Foundation and Real Big Fish. Golden Down is expected to reveal its lineup of DJs and bands within the next few days. The Matterley Estate first hosted live music in the late 1990s with the Creamlands Dance Festival. It was followed by the Homelands Hi-Fi, Sanctuary and Glade Festivals before Boomtown Fair arrived last year. The site also hosted a one-off concert by JLS last year, which led to traffic chaos and ticket holders demanding refunds. It has also been used for British Motocross Grand Prix and Motocross of Nations.
Garden Guru is show president. TV gardening expert Alan Titchmarsh has been elected president of this year's New Forest Show. The former Ground Force presenter is planning to attend all 3 days of the event, which will be held at New Park, Brockenhurst, in July. Born and brought up on the edge of Ilkley Moor, he started growing things at the age of 10 in his parents' back garden. He left school at 15 and became an apprentice gardener in the local nursery, following this with full-time training at Horticultural College and the Royal Botanic Gardens, Kew. He's never looked back since. Alan, aged 62, who lives near Alton, was awarded the MBE in 2000 for services to horticulture and broadcasting, and was made a Deputy Lieutenant of Hampshire the following year. In 2004, he received the Victoria Medal of Honour, the highest accolade in the UK gardening world. He was awarded an honorary degree by the University of Winchester in 2007 and was appointed High Sheriff of the Isle of Wight in 2008. The New Forest Show began in the early 1920s. Last year, it attracted more than 100,000 visitors for the first time in its history. This year's event will take place on July the 24th to the 26th.
College offers alternative to debt-laden studies. Peter Simmons College, Winchester, is enabling students to study for the first 2 years of a full honours degree programme prior to a top-up year at university. The Adult Continuing Education Centre, ACE, has just announced its foundation degree and higher education courses for September 2012. The qualifications offer students an alternative to spending 3 expensive years at university, with ACE course fees at a far more modest £3,200 per year. The foundation degree, or diploma in HE, is a qualification in its own right, but students wanting a full honours degree can then choose to complete the third year at ACE, subject to availability, or at university. The foundation degrees and DIP HE certificates are validated by Middlesex University, and students will obtain a degree, DIP HE certificate, at the end of their 2 years. 9 programmes are offered, as well as 2 higher national diploma programmes. Alex Day, Director of Adult Education at Peter Simmons, says, ACE's degree programmes are designed with a contemporary, modern edge, making them relevant and useful for today's employers. This is a truly exciting development for the college and for the students of Winchester. I'm very proud to be offering a real alternative to the traditional route to a degree. ACE has a series of open events for people interested in finding out more about the courses on offer. The first is on Monday, March the 12th, from 5 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.
Gala dinner to promote fair trade. The University of Winchester is hosting a gala dinner next week in support, of fair trade. A group of event management students have teamed up with former Hampshire Chef of the Year Andy McKenzie to put on a dinner on Wednesday, March the 7th, as part of Fair Trade Fortnight. The event is being held to raise awareness of fair trade and create a legacy for the Winchester City Fair Trade Network. Mr. McKenzie, Leinston House chef who designed the menu, said, "This unique event has my full support. The university students have come up with a great way of celebrating, promoting and supporting both fair trade produce as well as that of our rural Hampshire community. A wonderful opportunity for us all." The evening will include live music from the University African Drumming Ensemble and a silent auction, including dinner for two at the Bangkok Brasserie. The event is at the West Downs campus and starts at 7:30. Tickets cost £25 and are available on 07786 936 375. I'll say that again. 07786 936 375.
New enclosure will perk up penguins. Penguins at Marwell Wildlife are set to be perked up with a new enclosure. The park has submitted a planning application to the City Council to revamp its 15-year-old Penguin World attraction. The £250,000 development would see better food and water management, new accommodation, a larger viewing area, and a new nautical-themed play area for children. A spokesman for Marble said, Our plans for the new exhibit will not only benefit our Humboldt penguins through offering new facilities plus better water and food management, but will also create a more immersive and enjoyable experience for our guests. Penguins arriving into or departing from the colony need to spend a short time in isolation, so an extension to the existing building will provide new accommodation with pools where our animal keepers can closely monitor the birds. Funding for the project was provided through a grant from the Thomas Stainer Trust. Marwell aims to open the New Look Penguin World by May, in time for its 40th anniversary.
Same-sex wards on the increase. More patients than ever before are able to stay in same-sex wards in hospitals across Hampshire. Department of Health data shows that no patients stayed in mixed-sex accommodation last December in all Hampshire hospitals without clinical justification, down from 600 patients in December 2010. Across England, a record 73% of hospitals are reporting no cases of shared accommodation, an increase from 52% the previous year. Sarah Elliott, Director of Nursing for the Southampton, Hampshire, Isle of Wight and Portsmouth PCT cluster, said, "It is great news that our hospitals are able to ensure that most patients get to stay in single-sex accommodation unless they need to be treated in mixed-sex wards for clinical reasons."
Peddler's grand effort. Hospital staff joined forces and swapped scrubs for Lycra as they pedalled to benefit sick children. A dozen from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital Winchester and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital cycled the 26 miles between the two hospitals in the aid of the RHCH Magic Wand Appeal. Taking part were surgeons, doctors, physiotherapists and a medical records clerk, and their success raised £1,000. It also marked the launch of the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, the integration of the Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare NHS Trust, which ran the RHCH, and the Basingstoke and North Hampshire NHS Foundation Trust. The Magic Wand Appeal aims to raise £1.6 million to redesign and refurbish the children's unit at RHCH. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust consultant paediatrician Keith Foote, who organised the event, said, "It was great for staff from both sites to mark the launch of Hampshire Hospitals and raise money for the Magic Wand Appeal. Thousands of children are seen and treated at Royal Hampshire County Hospital every year, and we want to make sure we have the best facilities for our patients and their families. It's so important to raise this money, as it really will help to make a difference to children's lives."
First Council homes in the Generation Move a step closer. Residents in Winchester will have their council tax frozen for the next year. City councillors have approved measures that will see the rate remain at £126.27 for Band D. Councillors also approved the housing revenue account budget and business plan, which includes £42 million provision to potentially support the building of up to 300 council homes during the next 10 years. The budget and council tax recommendations for 2012 and 13 were approved by the full council last Thursday, with a council tax requirement including local precepts of £377. I'll read that amount again. The local precepts of 9,261,377 pounds. The council's report stated that the government had said all local authorities that freeze council tax will receive an additional one-year grant equivalent to having set a 2.5% increase. Spending will include a requested contribution of £0.139 million over 3 years, including £46,000 this year, towards a scheme for high-speed broadband for Hampshire, which was agreed as part of the capital programme. the council has prioritised maintaining grants to the voluntary section over a curbside glass collection, which has been delayed for a further year, but would have cost £200,000 to set up and the same each year to maintain it. Charges for Sunday parking and other business-unfriendly increases in parking that the Conservatives have stopped in last year's budget are not to be reintroduced, Councillor Keith Wood, lead member for Finance and Estates, added. There will be no pay increase for council staff, although there is a provision for a small increase for the lowest paid employees, while councillors' allowances have been frozen. Councillor Wood said this year's budget had been helped by the recent introduction of a new waste contract, which will save £1 million a year. He said further opportunities to work jointly where there is a clear benefit would be looked at. For example, a shared head of IT services with Test Valley Borough Council has been agreed, with further collaboration possible. The budget also includes £10,000 provided to support a pilot community rural bus scheme in the southern parishes to mitigate the cuts in bus services. A further £50,000 was set aside for improvements to public toilets in Wickham, subject to satisfactory discussions with the parish council. With so much uncertainty, it would be irresponsible for the council to enter into any long-term revenue commitments which the council may find unaffordable in future years. Liberal Democrat leader Kelsey Lerney put forward amendments including that the new Winchester Citizens Advice Bureau has agreed funding for the next 3 years to give it some stability, and £25,000 funding for parish councils for local bus transport. But these were all rejected by the Conservatives. Councillor Ian Tate, Conservative, called on the council to press on with the council houses project quickly and pointing out that finding sites to build on would not be easy. We have got to be brave and we have got to stand up to the NIMBY people across this district, he said. I'm happy with housing, they say, but it's never appropriate where I live.
Police called to rave in Woodland. Police were called to remote Woodland after around 200 young people gathered for a rave last Saturday night. The partygoers and a music system set up in Mitchell Dever Wood, north of Winchester, close to the M3 motorway. The police received one complaint about noise pollution, but decided against shutting down the party. Sergeant John Stribley of Winchester Police said, "There were five police officers and more than 200 ravers. We could have shut it down, but that would have had huge resource implications across the whole of the force area. We only had one complaint, which unfortunately for that person is not pleasant." Sergeant Stribley said the event did not cause too many problems. It was in a secluded location under the motorway, but we will be liaising with the Forestry Commission to make sure it does not happen again. Unless we deal with it now, we will get more problems there as it gets warmer. The following day, it was spotless. Quite often it's the case that if you clear up after, there aren't the number of complaints. One person was arrested initially on suspicion of drug driving, but was later charged with driving whilst disqualified and other motoring offences. It's very unusual for such raves to happen in February and reflects the mild weather. Most of the partygoers were from the Basingstoke, Tadley and Farnborough areas, said Sergeant Stribley.
Minister met with protest. Students and staff protested in Winchester during a visit of Schools Minister Nick Gibb to the city. Mr Gibb had a brief chat with protesters when he arrived at the Sparkford Road campus last Thursday. Around 15 students, staff and union activists raised concerns about government education changes. They were upset about cuts in the sector and academies being able to hire teachers without PGCE teaching qualifications. They also attacked Mr Gibb's past comment that Oxbridge graduates without PGCEs could make better teachers than those who took the course from lesser universities. The University of Winchester was graded as outstanding by Ofsted in 2010 for teacher training. Current students at the demo included Akhil Morgan, who is reading education studies with modern liberal arts. He said, "It seems the Tories want to take us back to the days of more discipline and children standing behind desks reciting times tables." He added, "When you make so many cuts in education, they just don't heal." Branch Secretary of the University and College Union, Dr. Mick Jardine, was also at the protest. "We think that the teachers who are teaching our children should have a fully rounded and professional education," he said. Mr. Gibb, who arrived at the university with Winchester MP Steve Brine, said, "Most of the academy schools are still looking for teachers who have PGCEs, so there are clear advantages in having a PGCE." Later in the day, Mr. Gibb visited Henry Beaufort School in Hairstock and Thorndon School in Chandler's Ford.
Phil's a proud walker. Winchester residents joined one man's quest to walk across the nation. Earlier this year, Phil Packer, MBE, walked 10 miles in Winchester as part of his 2012 miles in 2012 challenge. Mr. Parker suffered spinal cord damage in 2008 and was told he may never walk again, but has since been calling on the public to join him in raising £15 million to build a centre of inspirational excellence to help young people overcome adversity. His route started at Winchester Rugby Club at River Park, walking via the cathedral before ending back at the rugby club. He was also joined by members of Hampshire Fire and Rescue. He will continue to tour the country throughout the rest of the year, finishing in London in December.
Farms Lambing Open Days. People are being invited to see lambing in action at a farm this month and next. Westlands Farm in Shedfield is opening its doors for people to see the lambs, have a chance to feed them, and possibly even see them being born on days in March and April. It has done so for the last 4 years, and there will be a farmer on hand to answer any visitors' questions, as well as information signs around the farm, which is in Prickett's Hill. Open days are Saturday, March the 24th, Sunday, March the 25th, Saturday, March the 31st, and Sunday, April the 1st, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Hand washing and toilet facilities are available, as well as refreshments, and there is plenty of free parking. For health reasons, pregnant women should not attend. Entry costs £2.50 for adults and £1.50 for children.
Hotel's new spa complex. A Winchester hotel is opening a new spa complex and will be changing its name as a result. The Winchester Hotel in Worthy Lane will be relaunching itself as the Winchester Hotel and Spa. The four-star venue, run by Quantum Hotels Limited, will be opening the new spa treatment rooms in May. Managing Director Gregory Harris said, "We strongly believe that the new facilities will be extremely popular with our hotel residents and health club members alike, and our spa treatments will also be available to members of the public to enjoy. The spa treatments will operate alongside the hotel's existing health club, swimming pool and relaxation area."
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell and Irene Dowding, and thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Ross Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 2nd of March 2012.